Our mission is a simple one. ERA 5050 want to see women represented on stage and screen in equal numbers to men.
Here, on the New ERA podcast, we will be talking to the women and men of the moment who are working towards equality, celebrating their success and discussing the solutions we can use to help move the industry forward. Hello there, and thank you for joining us for the third episode of the New ERA podcast. I'm Rose, and you might notice today that we sound a little bit different because I am recording currently in a tiny little vocal booth in London.
And I'm Ellie Yates calling in from Cornwall this week. So apologies if it sounds a bit weird, but we are still getting together to create this New ERA podcast with the magic of the internet and an iPhone and a laptop and some headphones. So hopefully it doesn't sound too weird.
No, thank you. Thank you, George, for sorting this out for us. And this week, we will be focusing on the film and TV industry. We wanted to, essentially, for this episode, talk to the solution makers. So basically, the people who have set up databases, who are opening up discussions, and who are essentially putting their money where their mouth is when they're faced with the questions, where are all the women? Where are all the people of colour? And where are all the deaf and disabled artists?
So at ERA 5050, we want to talk about how we can change the industry for the better, about who is changing the industry, and about who's opening up the discussion when it comes to equal representation. So we're bringing to you what we've heard on the grapevine. There are some easy solutions out there for people at all different levels. So if you are a famous actor listening to this, what you can do is take a leaf out of Benedict Cumberbatch's book.
So we rejoiced back in May, I think it was mid-May, when we read that Benedict Cumberbatch had publicly announced in an interview with the Radio Times that he will only be doing films where his female co-stars are paid equally. We had a read of the Radio Times article, and we will put a link to it in the show notes. And to quote his interview, he says, "Equal pay and a place at the table are the central tenets of feminism." Way to go, Benedict. He also says, "Look at your quotas. Ask what women are being paid and say, if she's not paid the same as men, I'm not doing it." He also goes on to explain how he wants to use his platform and his celebrity to, I suppose, provide opportunities for women to help develop their careers. And he also says that in the interview, he says, "I'm proud that partner Adam Ackland and I are the only men in our production company. Our next project is a female story with a female lens about motherhood in a time of environmental disaster," ticking all those boxes. "If it's centred around my name to get investors, then we can use that attention for a raft of female projects. Half the audience is female," which is essentially...
More than half, right?
Exactly. 51%. And that's essentially what ERA 5050's messaging is. So, anyway, head to the link in the show notes and have a bit more of a read of that interview. It's really interesting. It just means that people are starting to have the conversations and getting the word out there that we need to see more women on screen. We need to hear more female stories. And hopefully... Benedict will continue this kind of work.
So I haven't actually listened to this, but Rose, you picked up on this today. This was the speech from Rachel Chavkin, winner of Best Director of a Musical at the Tony Awards. Is that this week? So what made you want to highlight this?
So essentially what caught my ear when I first listened to Rachel's Tony speech was that she is so right. I mean, she was talking about Broadway and the work in the States and in New York. But what she's saying essentially is that there are people who are not being seen as the cream of the crop. They're not being employed on Broadway. They're not being employed in the West End. You know, there's people waiting off Broadway, off West End. There's struggling artists who are not getting paid for their work, but they're ready to go and they have such rich, diverse, brilliant work. And you
but
see
they're not getting access to the bigger spaces and the more prestigious stages.
Exactly. And yeah. This is an ongoing problem and is really the next step, I think, in finding equality in terms of people of colour and of gender and in all those areas, because we need to employ the people who are telling these stories and we're not doing it.
Yeah, and we need to tell these stories. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what we're all about.
Yeah.
She says this in her speech and it, she just hits the nail on the head. And if you want to hear what she has to say, then listen up.
My folks raised me with the understanding that life is a team sport, and so is walking out of hell. That's what is at the heart of the show. It's about whether you can keep faith when you are made to feel alone. And it reminds us that that is how power structures try to maintain control, by making you feel like you're walking alone in the darkness, even when your partner is right there at your back. And this is why I wish I wasn't the only woman directing a musical on Broadway this season. There are so many women who are ready to go. There are so many artists of color who are ready to go. And we need to see that racial diversity and gender diversity reflected in our critical establishment too. This is not a pipeline issue. It is a failure of imagination by a field whose job is to imagine the way the world could be. So let's do it. Thank you. Thank you.
Kind of on that theme, really, sticking with the National Theatre from the Hadestown, we were sent a message from Charlotte Bevan, who leads the NT's Creative Diversity Project, and she wanted to ask us to tell you about Profile. This is the NT's online video database for deaf and disabled performers. Its aim is to increase the representation of deaf and disabled actors in our industries, and loads of actors have been cast in all sorts of roles through this site. So if you aren't aware of it, please check it out at www.profileperformers.com. But what we're trying to say this week is that you don't have to be an A-list celebrity or a big national institution like the NT to make a change. This week, we spoke to Victoria Emsley from Primetime and Akua Jamfi from the British Blacklist, who have both independently set up their own databases that shine a light on underrepresented groups in the industry. So here we have with us today Victoria Emsley, actress best known for her roles in Downton Abbey and The Theory of Everything, and the founder of Primetime, a centralised global network of all the women working above and below the line within the entertainment industry. She is also the Time's Up UK liaison for Era 5050, the secretary for the Writers Group, and a core member of our Era 5050 team.
We also have with us today Akua Jamfi, the co-chair of the Women of Colour Working Group for Time's Up UK. She has more than 20 years of experience in the entertainment industry, with a career that spans fashion, film, television, theatre, print, and online media. She is also the founder and managing director of the British Blacklist, an online media platform which showcases British black talent in the arts across screen, stage, sound, and literature. It also has a database of British black talent which serves as a visibility platform for the arts industry to find diverse talent to work with. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us today and taking an hour out of your crazy schedules for us to talk to you.
Thank you for having us.
Good. So, yeah, so let's start. So you've both created a database. Mm. So who wants to go first?
I started mine in 2012. The idea popped into my head about in 2011, and it was just, I realised there was something missing in the, I say the Google world, just the Google sphere of being able to find information about British black talent in the arts. And I knew that there was kind of stuff going on, but it wasn't really being celebrated. An example would be like Daniel Kaluuya at that time was in a film called Sicario. And anecdotally, he wouldn't necessarily get like the main interview. They'd talk about everybody else in the cast, but not him. Mm-hmm. But then people who are from his area or who knew know who he is, were like, okay, where's his interview? Where's this missing thing celebrating British black talent. So I thought, hey, let's build a database housing every single British black talent in the arts that I could ever think of. So it took about a year to build, just researching like what I could find, and I put it all together. And then at the end, when I compiled the database, I then thought, okay, what's going to keep people coming back? My whole thing was people needed to trust the brand, understand who I was, what the British Blacklist was all about, and with a view to grow it similar. It was modelled on IMDb. And so I added on the editorial stuff, because I'm a journalist by qualification. And So that was going to be like news reviews and interviews, all that type of stuff to keep people in this world of British black talent. And that's literally very shortened, long version of what how it all came about. I mean, it's been a labour of love. This is our seventh year. It's been a roller coaster. But we've worked with some really good organisations. It has worked in the whole getting people to see and understand what's going on in the British Black Arts world. The database has been a journey because when I launched it, I didn't factor in the fact that it needed to be updated all the time. Who knew? and like, for example, in 2012, Idris Elba's CV was not the CV that he has today in 2019. So those are the, so I've had a learning curve on those type of things. So, but the editorial side has gone from strength to strength. We've spoken to so many people and like I said, the industry knows pretty much who we are and what we do, and it's quite been quite respected. My key thing was making sure it was respected, because people tend to look down on independent production projects and stuff like that. So I just wanted the industry to know that we're serious and we're about bridging the gap between this so-called hard to reach diverse audience that the industry seemed to confine, much like women.
And I noticed that your kind of key writers are mainly women. So when you set it up, was that something, were you thinking about black British women in mind, or was it just in general and they've just kind of...
Generally, I think we have a race problem when it comes to the arts, and we have a gender problem, but then for us it's race first because it's visibility. So the first thing you see is our colour. And I think women in the workplace, black women fare a bit better and black men don't in like corporate situations. In the arts, I think black men are a bit more favoured when it comes to roles and stuff like that, and women aren't, black women aren't as successful. But overall it was just race at first. And the team dynamic is literally, I don't know, women are great and they're resilient and they keep on with it. I mean, I've had some really great male supporters and male writers, but it has just been by default when things are really down to the wire, I've had mostly women that have stuck at it and supported the cause.
I mean, I find it really interesting that it's kind of spans so many areas of like the arts industry. What kind of led you to want to showcase all types of work?
Yeah, I kind of know what I was doing when I thought of that. So ambitious. It was just like one of those things, you have an idea and like, yes, this is what I'm going to do, the IMDb for British Black Talent, yay. But my case study, I always start with Ashley Waters, who, he's a rapper, a writer, director, producer, actor. So all those things, I think it's happening more now that everybody in the arts is kind of multifaceted and it's 360, have so many different skills. Whereas I think when I first started doing it, I assumed, well, you're an actor, and you're a singer and you're a rapper. So it was hard to just condense his CV to just being about his acting career, because actually he's been so solid and actually he's written some stuff. And actually, so that's where it kind of spread into other categories. I thought, I can't ignore the other categories. And I suppose across the arts, maybe we do a bit better in theatre, I think, actually. On stage is a bit more creative freedom for British black talent, but screen and sound and all that stuff, there's different challenges. So I thought, okay, let's just open it up. We lean heavily towards theatre and to stage and screen. And sound used to be about musicians, but I think they don't really need my help in this way. So that's going to be changed to more sound, as in technical people who work in that type of thing, composers and scorers and all that type of stuff. And then literature, I have a love for books and British black authors. Again, there's challenges there. Yeah. There's a need. So, and also it feeds into the screen and TV narrative, because adaptations and stuff like that, people are always looking for new stories. This feeds the industry because there are a bunch of black writers that write great stories and could be option for the big screen or small screen.
The same opening question to you, Victoria, and it's a much newer enterprise.
As of 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago. So I think that's really interesting to have both of you here. So can you tell us about your baby, your brand new?
It's been an absolute whirlwind, actually. And it's been wonderful to have people like you to look up to and say, you've done it before. Thank you for leading the way with us as well. It's been great. So I think for me, I first came to Time's Up about a year ago. And I came to Era 50/50 and was like, actually, I have a thing I really want to do where I want to showcase someone who's been in the industry for a really long time, someone who's sort of mid-level and someone who's entry, and see if I can create some sort of mentoring scheme between those three and highlight them on a website. And that was the initial idea behind Primetime. And then went to Time's Up and, you know, you're sort of surrounded in this room with leaders in the industry and it's all very overwhelming. And they were sort of, God, it would be great to have a centralized database of all the women working in the industry. And I was like, that sounds great. Yeah. And so I went away and sort of thought about it and developed it for 8 or 9 months, worked with an incredible tech team called Hacta that sort of just do social good projects, which has been wonderful to work alongside them. And yeah, we launched in Cannes 2 weeks ago and have currently, I think, almost 700 members. We had applications from about 2,000 women from all over the world. Wow. We're in 14 different countries already and have Oscar nominated, Emmy winners, BAFTA winners. And it's growing every day at the moment. It's kind of word of mouth now. Mm. And yeah, it's been, like I said, a complete whirlwind journey, but I think people have been very receptive to it, and there's a need for it in the industry, because it answers a very simple question, well, a complicated question with a simple tool. You know, where are all the women? They're here.
And what was it that initially inspired you to set that up? So you had that initial idea, but
yes.
What was it that pushed you to, I suppose, pursue this one?
I was also thinking, God, I hit 30, and as an actor, I was like, thinking, God, I can't remember the last time I auditioned for a female director or read something written by a female writer. And I was like, where are the women? Why am I not sort of seeing that work? And then it kind of led to, God, it would be really great to, you know, in collaboration with Time's Up and what they were saying, if there was a sort of merging of those two ideas of, you know, because actually what we know is we change the conversation behind screen, you change the conversation on screen. And that's why I think, you know, having amazing black writers means that, you know, those stories become more visible.
Exactly.
People have role models to look up to, and everyone deserves a role model to look up to. They want to see themselves represented on screen and on stage. I think that's what we're working towards, you know, having an industry that is representative of the society we live in. That's what we want, really. Mm.
So who can sign up and become a member?
Anyone who's got a minimum of 3 IMDb credits in the grade that you want to apply. So we ask that if they're short films, they have to be sort of Academy accredited, festival goers as well. Because at the moment we have rising members and we have full members. We'd like to open it up and have a graduate scheme at some point to also help that sort of bottleneck in the industry, which we see a lot, because I think there's 50% of film schools take 50-50, and then soon after they graduate, the numbers just drop off completely. And we don't know why that is. And I think women are not seen as trustworthy and various other things like that.
And it's probably something to do with role models, right?
Absolutely.
Is that, you know, hopefully, well, you would hope that women who are higher up in the industry would be, if there's lots of them, they'd be bringing up the graduates. But
absolutely.
If they're not there, then there's no one to look up to see that you can get to that level.
But that's the thing. You can't see her, you can't be her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it, exactly. Yeah. And I think if your idea of a director automatically in your head is male, white, of a certain age, that unconscious bias means that you imagine a successful director. That's the only thing you can imagine a successful director being, is male, white, and of a certain age. So it's changing those unconscious biases and making them... making sure that we have those people that represent everyone in those positions of power, especially those gatekeeper positions.
Okay, for you, was there a point where you were pushed to set up your database?
It wasn't necessarily pushed, it just was a kind of weight. I don't know what it feels like, I don't know how to describe it, but I just had this need, because just generally, I just thought, well, what's missing? Why is this thing not... Why does this not exist? I actually was so surprised that there wasn't one before. And I think my journey was so really artsy-fartsy. So I was like, I have this idea. I didn't have the business strategy at all. So coming back at it to look at it from a business perspective now, see how it best serves the industry, is quite interesting. Because now it's like, this thing has done well on the very basics. And people have cast from it. They've found talent from the database. And because it was just open information... People have, the British Blacklist brand is now synonymous with celebrating British black talent and becoming like a bridge between the industry and this, again, this so-called hard-to-reach audience or group of pool of talent. So it's just something I wanted to do.
So the information was all out there, it just wasn't accessible.
Yeah, so the industry is saying that they can't find talent. Everyone's got their own different kind of list, their go-to list, and maybe it's the same few people that they're going to all the time. People are like, we just get pushed to the wayside. I have talked to actors... Say, you know, I know it's similar to everybody. You go into the casting room and you see the same old people, but then when it comes to black actors or marginalised groups, there's this trust thing. So they go with the top 3. You're only going to have those in and the rest never get a chance, and there's no kind of middle ground. Yeah. So the information's out there, but not in one house. And that's where I thought, okay, this needs to be the house for it all.
So do you input all the data, or is it something that people can sign up for? And if so, how can they do
that? So in the new iteration, which will launch this year. In the new iteration, people will sign up, update their information, and treat it like it was modelled on IMDb. Yeah. It's just a calling card. And just to say, we're here, this is reputable, same type of thing, have some credits. I think, again, for black talent, it's a bit different because there's a big thing with the research that I did, trust. We're seen as a risk. It's all like, you know, the numbers game and all that type of stuff. And there are very minimum HODs of colour in the behind the scenes. So I want to kind of have, yes, verified and vouched for talent. Even people who are like middle-aged, been doing stuff for years, are still seen as new talent or a risk. So, but I want to have somewhere to showcase those people. Because I think there is this kind of stagnant section where you're middle-aged, you've got a mortgage, you've got a family, you've got responsibilities, but you're still not seen as worthy enough to run a, you know, be HOD of a department, whatever, whatever. So what do I do for those people? I think they're my people, my age group, the oldies.
It's about sustaining a career.
Yeah, exactly. And being able to just have that kind of longevity and respect that, you know, I'm not a runner. I'm not, shouldn't be on a scheme, a diversity scheme, no more diversity scheme to just keep you in this loop. And then people see you as a token and they think that you're just there on a quota rather than on merit. People want to do away with all of that. So that's the kind of people that are going to be like under my wing that I want to really support. Don't know how to justify their existence exactly, but then this is what it is. So it's verified new talent and this middle ground talent that really are more than just a tick box.
Is that returning to work as well, isn't it, after...
Maternity leave,
maternity leave, because I think there was some horrifying statistic that I think every time you have a baby, you lose 4% of your future earnings or something, your 4% of your future earnings decrease. I know, but it's totally sort of unacceptable. And actually, you have these wonderful organisations like Raising Films that are brilliant, and I think having crashes on studio lots and things like that. So I think it's so important making this industry more family friendly because that's what it needs to be.
And people with other caring responsibilities.
Other caring responsibilities. Absolutely.
Because I think when I had my daughter, I was a hairdresser on, and I was working on set, did fashion and film and music videos. And when I had my daughter, I was like, okay, I can't do this. I have to do. I mean, it's great because then I went off and got my journalism degree, but the whole thing of being out on set, coming home at whatever time, and then having to find childcare, it's a big thing. It's an extra cost. Mummy guilt is real, especially if you've got ambitions. And that kind of compromised my ideas and dreams and my hopes because I've got to raise a child. And I want to raise a child that's not detriment to society because mummy wasn't there. How dare you? So, I mean, all that stuff is real. So it's like, you know, I'm lucky my child's older now and she was under my arm. I brought her on set and to think where it was viable, hoping that someone on that they're not going to say, no, get away, you weird way with a baby under your arm, go. So, yeah, making things more accessible and more friendly for mothers especially. And
absolutely. And also, for fathers as well. So you can take time off if you want to be with your family, you know, paid paternity leave, I think, sort of sharing responsibilities. You know, it's not always down to the mother, I think, and shouldn't be.
Yeah.
So I think to sort of promote that, I think, would also be quite good.
Yeah, well, once you make it more accessible for women to be able to go to work with a child or for men to be able to take an equal amount of the responsibility, then that's when you start getting onto equal grounds.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I can't believe it's 2019 and
we're still talking about it.
I mean, it's so funny because the conversations we have when we're in the black group, it's the same as when women are speaking, people with alternative abilities are speaking. It's so, there's a point where you're like, why is it so hard just to change? It's literally just don't do that.
which is interesting because we seem to be in a time when activism, you know, people making their own solutions, right? So here we've got a table of people and organisations who are trying to find solutions to solve these problems. So do either of you have advice for or tips or clues for people who are looking at wanting to do something to change their circumstances?
Find your tribe, I think. Yeah. Find your tribe. Go and these people are out there. People, you know, come join ERA. Come along to meetings and find out what we do. See how you can get involved. Because I remember first reaching out to ERA and being like, how do I do something with you? And Polly was amazing getting back to me. And I started going along to meetings. And then you find your own ideas and say, actually, I can take ownership of this idea and do this. And maybe get a couple of other people, collaborate with them. them. And then, you know, you become a sort of autonomous being with your own drive and your own purpose. And I think it really, it's given me so much. All of these things in this last year, finding Era, finding Time's Up, finding the people that are helping me with Prime Time has just been such a revelation.
If something's on you, like I said, I couldn't describe what it was, but I had this idea and I was like a beaver getting on with it, just trying to get it done. And though it took me a year, so what? And it's been a struggle, totally not rich, barely paying my bills. However, I can't see myself doing anything different. And anytime I do have those kind of, oh, why? And I could just stop this and go back to being a hairdresser. Then someone, literally, every time I have a thought where it's, I'm done with this, it's too much, I'll bump into someone or someone will message me and say, thank you so much, the British Blacklist is everything, we need it, love it, blah, blah, blah. And it's not just to get, like, you know, big head and gassed up about it. It's the fact that someone actually is saying that it's made a difference and it's worthy, and you just get reinforced with the fact that, you know, if it's on you to do something, just do it, and usually things fall into place, not easily, but the minute it's like speaking it into existence, it is literally that, because the minute I started talking about it, I met other people that were interested, the bits all fell into place, it naturally happens, and then you start meeting people who are doing similar things, and you all become kind of this kind of crew of activists in your own way.
So in your experience for the past 6-7 years, what have you been most proud of?
The database part and getting people cast and people saying that I use it to cast and find talent, that's been brilliant, because it shows that your idea made sense and it works in your moments of doubt, as I've said. Another thing that I'm quite proud of is helping the red carpet diversify when it comes to British Black-owned platforms, because, you know, when I first started out, it was like, yes, I want to speak to all the celebrities and all that type of stuff, just because I knew that would add weight and respect to the brand, because you need that to kind of advance, because people are into the shiny stuff. So, but then knocking down the doors of PRs that don't know you, and especially being a Black publication, there's a bit of resistance to trusting the quality of our content. So that was a long, hard slog. And then getting to be on the carpet actually and being maybe the only Black publication was also a problem. And things have changed now. There are a lot more publications, Black publications, that are on the red carpet, a lot more in press junkets. Because before, again, one thing that the industry needs to understand is that talent, especially from other countries, Black talent want to, you know, women to women, we're talking, we have a different kind of conversation. It's the same for everybody else from different tribes. You have a different conversation when you're with people that you know. So you get better content sometimes, not all the time, but you get better content. So I was saying that, you know, talent that comes over, they want to talk to Black journalists, because you have an even understanding the project from a different perspective, you'll have questions and answers that won't come from other people. So that battle has been an upward struggle, but things have changed and there are a lot more, there's a lot more diversity when it comes to press junkets and the red carpet. So that's one thing that I've been really excited to see change. And the celebrity stuff soon falls out of the way when you've got deadlines and stuff to do. But I met Lupita. The Black Panther coverage was amazing. Michael B. Jordan. Yeah, so all that stuff comes with it. That's fun. And I just think, yeah, the longevity, long standing, the maintaining this stuff and collaborating with great people. We're about to launch a film festival that's starting in August. Another organisation called We Are Parable, the New Black Film Collective, and Soul Film UK. That's going to be exciting because it's going to be one of the first kind of officially recognised British Black Film Festivals.
And have you noticed a change within the time that you've had the British Blacklist?
There is a lot more talent being seen in different spaces, more writers, more directors, producers, and obviously on-screen talent. There has been a change in the representation, the visibility. However, it's still tick boxing and it's still lip service and we're still having diversity events and nothing's changed essentially, but there's been some visible changes, like you'll see more people on screen and on stage and more, but then there's still a bit of puppet controlling of what kind of stories are told and who gets to tell the story, and there's still a bunch of British Black creatives who are sitting in writers' rooms or in, you know, development teams that are still being developed and not being commissioned and stuff like that. So the trust, there's still barriers, but there has been a change and the British Black creative community is shining and burgeoning and developing, and we're getting our own kind of, I don't know what to call it, British Black Hollywood type thing going on. There is a network, and there, I think there's a group of 30-year-olds, the babies, who are coming up together, which is interesting. And I'm mad to be a part of it because I'm older, but there's a group of people that are doing stuff. And they're not taking stuff sitting down, and they're more active about and speaking out and all that type of stuff. So I think we're heading towards something.
It's the same kind of going off the back of that, just like going to women's-led workshops, diversity workshops. Women are seen as diversity. We're 51% of the population. Yeah. I'm sick of this word diversity. I'm sick of the word even inclusion, to be honest. It's just kind of... Let's just get on with it. Yeah. You know, it's so boring.
Yeah.
I'm bored.
Yes.
Honestly.
Yes.
That's kind of the stage we've got to.
It may only be two weeks old, but is there something that you are most proud of so far?
Doing it.
Yeah. Doing it.
I think, honestly, working 20-hour days at the moment, doing pretty... I mean, everything that you see... has been my creation pretty much. So everything is, you know, with the help of so many incredible people, but to see it actually up and running. And as I think, as you talk about these things for ages and you're like, oh, I'm doing a thing. Are you interested in this thing? And people are like, this thing sounds interesting. Come back to me when it's really a thing.
Yeah.
And now it's a thing.
And you've been endorsed by some incredible organisations.
Amazingly. I mean, Era 5050 were kind of one of the first people to come on board, which was just catapulted us and to having other conversations, which was so essential, I think, as an independent. You know, how do you get taken seriously? Yeah. You have these ideas, you have all the goodwill in the world, but you might not be known to other people. So how do you go about it? And it's finding people that actually have, further on in the industry, that have are respected. And that kind of like, oh, I'll give it a punt. That seems like in line with what we're doing as well. And that's been amazing. And Time's Up as well, because it kind of came from an idea from Time's Up UK. So they've been brilliant as well. And also the Gina Davis Institute. Who are just brilliant. Like Madeline Donano, who's the CEO there, just jumped on a call. And I love America. I love America. This stuff doesn't happen here as much. But, you know, the people are like, that's a great thing you're doing. Let's do that together. And I think that's brilliant. And we need more of that, I think.
It's interesting that your hashtag for primetime is
no more excuses.
Because that is essentially what you guys are doing. Is, you know, if someone says, where are these people? You can literally send them a link.
They're here.
You can send them a link to a website. Absolutely. And be like, this is your solution. There is no more discussion.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think also, you know, I'm kind of done with naming and shaming. Mm-hmm. I think we need to raise up best practice now and, you know, give people, again, role models, companies that have best practice, celebrate that and encourage everyone else to come and join them on their level. I think that's kind of the way we're going to get the change.
That's another thing, because I think, I mean, in this whole shame culture, cancel culture, it's a lot. But the main thing is, yes, talking about the organisations, the people who are on it, who are supporting, who are up for this, then that's it. And then that hopefully will trickle down, like, oh, we want to be seen just as good as those lot. And our competitors are good. Oh, we're going to, you know, let them do their thing. And we're just here to say we're celebrating, my case, celebrating British Black Talent in the arts. And whoever's on board, it'll make you look really good if
really
you are.
Good.
Come on.
Come join.
Yeah, basically.
A question for both of you. What can people in the industry do to... help both of your databases?
Oh, gosh, sign up.
Sign up, support.
Yes. Share, invite.
Yeah, just talk about it and get involved, because it's hard. Yeah, I don't want to be in any more meetings saying, we don't know where the Black Talent is. And it's like, this is here. And also, we need to keep this going. Let's not be a flash in the pan. 7 years is a long time. However, it needs to continue. I need to be able to continue doing this and build a team that can keep this going. So let's not just say it's a pat it on the head like a good little child. Support it and let it grow into an adult.
Absolutely, it's the same. Sort of, we need to, I think there's no value to a database if there are no people on it.
Yeah.
So sign up, share. You know you've worked with brilliant women. So invite them, get them to sign up. You know, HODs. This is a great place to find all of your talent, directors as well, you know, and agencies. You don't have enough women on your books. Here's a great place to try and find more women for your books. That, you know, it kind of covers so many aspects. And companies, get involved. I mean, have conversations with us. We need help support.
So where can people find you?
So for Primetime, you go to www.primetime.network. And we're also on Twitter at Primetime Network with note. Network. It's very weird. You can't, there's only 15 characters on Twitter. Shame. I was like, I don't understand this. But that's us. And then primetime.network on Instagram as well.
The British Blacklist everywhere. I mean, Twitter's at Brit Blacklist because of the limitation. Get involved, join the network. I mean, if you've got a project going on, we'll talk about it, celebrate it, and then send your stuff in because that will be uploaded to the database, ready to go soon.
And you mentioned a film festival.
Yes, oh my gosh, yes. I've got to get used to plugging that too. Yeah. So it's a Soul Fest. It will be a combination of features and shorts. We're opening our short submissions dates soon, so that will be announced via our social media. We haven't got the website yet. However, we have secured the building and the dates are the 30th and 31st of August. We're opening with a feature and have the opening party on the Friday, and then on Saturday we've got a shorts programme, we've got a symposium, and we're screening three features. Very exciting features, can't talk about it. But yeah.
We'll update you when we get more. It's really exciting.
So yeah.
Amazing.
Thank you both so much for giving. I know you're really busy, so thank you very much
thank
for coming.
Thank you for having
me. Incredible.
It's been amazing.
So as you can hear, that was such a fantastic interview with Akua and Victoria. So just thanks to both of them for their time. They're really busy. They're working really hard on both those databases. And if you want to check both of them out, then we will pop a link in the show notes. Do share them, because people having access to them is what's going to change things for the better. Now, every episode, we want to champion women's stories and women's work that promotes 50-50 casting and creative teams.
So this week, we wanted to watch a film this time. And I saw on Twitter, Olivia Wilde, the actress and debut director, put this call out for support on Twitter. She said, "Anyone out there saving Booksmart for another day, consider making that day today. We are getting creamed by the big dogs out there and need your support. Don't give studios an excuse not to greenlight movies made by and about women." So, yeah, we thought this is a film that we absolutely have to go and support. So we went to see Booksmart at the Rio Cinema in Dalston, class trip. Rose, George and I went there and we spoke to the audience afterwards to see what they thought about this film.
I spent a majority of my 20s overcompensating for the fact that I never had fun in high school. I went crazy. You know I'm banned from Jamba Juice? Like, not a single Jamba Juice, like every Jamba Juice. And I cannot have another mango or go-go ever again.
Isn't it crazy that it's the last day?
Hey, boy. What you say, boy?
Don't talk to her.
Like a Game Boy.
Oh, sorry. Sharp elbows. Not as sharp as your chin.
What?
We missed out. We didn't party because we wanted to focus on school and get into good colleges.
And it worked.
We are not one-dimensional. We are smart and fun.
Woo! Excuse me. Oh.
We have to go to a party tonight.
What?
What took them 4 years, we are doing in one night!
I loved it. Really, I thought it was great. I love films about girls' friendships, and I found it very moving, very funny. I don't think I'm the target audience for it, but I really surprisingly really enjoyed it.
I loved it. It was so current, but not in a way that I was like, okay, you're hitting all these trendy marks. It was just like its own thing, but it was like still entertaining. I enjoyed that.
Really funny. Like it is like laugh out loud. Like the whole cinema was laughing.
Yeah, it was hilarious. Yeah, really kind of feel good. It made me reminisce quite a bit about school kind of times.
Yeah, you can definitely relate to a lot of the stuff as well. It was good.
Oh, that was great. I liked it a lot. It was fun. Heard it was like super bad, but with like a lady's perspective, which I think is quite like a trite way of describing it, having just seen it. So it was different to that, and it was really good.
One of the main actors is Jonah Hill's cousin, right? And I think, you know, if this were super bad again and it was another Jonah Hill film, it'd probably make a shit ton more money. And that's, not great.
Feels like maybe that particular story hasn't been told yet, so it's cool that that's been done.
Really funny. It was really cool seeing two women in the main parts, and
reflecting a female friendship. It's really cool.
I love it. Anything messy about female friendships, and I think the whole LGBT representation in it as well, especially with the two girls. I thought that was amazing. When I saw that happening, I was like, yeah, get in there. Nice and gay.
Yeah.
It's about the complexities of girls' friendships. I really enjoyed it. I really like the fact that our two key women are both very intelligent, a bit flawed, and they're very real in their friendship. Yeah, really liked it. Yeah.
I thought it was really good. I thought it was really funny. Didn't know anything about it. I just kind of walked in off the street because I was going to see a movie, but I'm really glad that I did. It was really great. It really reminded me of when I was in high school, like a few years ago. I graduated in 2015, and I thought it was kind of really true to the vibe of how people joked around with each other.
So about feminism, and there's a very interesting, it's a very contemporary story, so it's interesting to see how they show young women, especially in America.
Olivia Wilde, loved the director, amazing, like writer, like amazing. And I just like took a chance and I really enjoyed it.
Olivia Wilde, I guess, who directed it, she tweeted out something, I think, when it came out like last weekend, and she was saying that the box office wasn't as big, so everyone was going to see sort of like the big blockbusters that weekend. And I think that's like incredibly sad when you have like a fantastic like standalone story told like about women by women, and everyone's still just like queuing up to go and see like the next Avengers film. There's just something horrible about that that's worth, you know, changing.
There aren't many films out there that highlight specifically that one subject. That obviously is really important to me as a woman, so I was like, why not show some love? Why not get involved? Empowering, enlightening, entertaining.
Sex teen romp. There you go, great.
Hilarious, empowering friendship.
Really worth watching. Yeah, loved it.
F***ing great film, really good. Definitely go see it.
Don't say we're having a date night. Why, it's funny your parents think we're boning.
What you two have is special.
We are gonna show each other how much we care about each other.
We'll probably just do a Korean face mask.
I don't need to know all the words.
As you can hear, people really enjoyed the show. It was fantastic, brought all sorts of joy to our lives. And it's got a great soundtrack as well. I think you can listen to the soundtrack on Spotify.
Yeah, amazing soundtrack. Yeah, a glorious celebration of female friendship and being a teenager, and just so relatable. And
yeah, wonderful. So if it's in a cinema near you still, then go out and catch it, because it's just a really good night as well. A really great film, really good performances. So go and watch.
Oh, and quick thank you to Rio, the staff at Rio, for being brilliant and letting us sneak into their foyer with a microphone to record. So that's it from us for episode 3. Thank you again for listening. Join us again in 2 weeks' time when we're going to have another show recommendation and some more fantastic guests.
Please do get in touch with us directly on podcast@era5050.co.uk. If you have any questions or advice or would like to support the campaign, if you know of any work that you think that we should be going out to see or should be promoting, then please do get in touch. And you can also find us Era5050 on Twitter @era50_50, and we have our own podcast Instagram that is currently being developed. Bear with us. Where you can also, we'll put up a little bit more information about our guests and what they're doing and who they are. And you can find us on Instagram The New Era 5050.
Thank you so much to everyone who's been listening so far and sharing. It's amazing and we really appreciate it. And if you have enjoyed the podcast, please do tell your friends, your family, rate the podcast and leave a review, as it all helps to help other people find us.
A massive thanks, as always, to George Jennings, our producer, to all of our guests, and to Emmanuel DeLong at Equity, where we recorded the podcast and the interview with Akua and Victoria, and to Spotlight for their continued support of the Era 5050 campaign.
See you again in 2 weeks' time.